Hello, podcast listeners. We know podcasts are a great way to catch up on a program that you may have missed on KSJE, and it's provided as a free service of this radio station. But you know, KSJE is now listener-supported, and so while you enjoy this podcast, we hope that you'll also take some time to join KSJE. Become a member today. It's quite easy to do. Just go to our website at ksje.com/support and pick the level of support that best matches your budget. Thanks again for listening. Here's your podcast.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Megan Cullip, along here with Scott Micklin for our inaugural edition of The New Show.
The New Show. Good morning.
Good morning. It's been like a month.
It has been a month. Long. And we said we had something up our sleeve, and here it is.
Let's
hope it lives
up
to the hype, right?
Lots of hype out there.
Yeah, there is. It's a buzz.
Have you heard it? I've been hearing the buzz.
Have you heard it?
Yes.
There you go. But we're back. Solutions from the street, everybody.
That's it. That's what we're doing here. So,
and this is our show.
The motivation behind it. So,
but well, before we get there, I just want to point out that I don't know how your name got on there first. Is what I'm going to say.
Pure, I think alphabetical order or the logo masters just like me better.
There was some miscommunication somewhere, obviously, but I just want to point that out. So it's Solutions from the Street with Megan Cullip and Scott Micklin.
Yes, it is. Or Scott Micklin and Megan Cullip, whatever.
Well, it's in writing. If it's in print, it's true.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's how that works.
That's what I've heard.
Great.
Exactly. Anyway, it's nice to be back in the studio with you.
Yes, you too.
Thank you.
Yeah.
So what's the point?
The point of the show.
Why are we here?
Yes, exactly. The point of the show is I have been thinking about how journalism often focuses on the problem and then it kind of leaves you there.
Right.
But it would be really great to highlight goodness in the world and not in a way that is just sort of these sappy stories, which are good and they have their place, but in a way that is solutions focused. So the idea is solutions focused journalism.
Right. Right. Gotcha. But we're not going to sing Kumbaya.
No, I don't like that song.
Okay. All right. But I think it's a great concept. And you and I talked about that. And that was kind of what we wanted to do. And of course, folks who are familiar with you and I remember us from doing the COVID updates throughout the last forever.
yep. Longer than we thought.
And so we wanted to continue to work together on a new program with a new focus. And that's where we are.
That's where we're at.
So it's Solutions from the Street. And so our first problem is power.
Well, power, right.
And climate.
And climate, yes.
Yeah. So let's fix that.
We should.
That's 30 minutes.
Let's fix it in 30 minutes.
Yeah.
Right. And I'm somewhat of a novice with these issues. So
you're certainly a power user.
I'm not a novice in how much power I consume. I'm definitely right up there with the average American, I think. But
good for you.
Yeah.
I'd say you're above average. You're welcome.
Listen, I turn off the lights when I leave,
okay.
And the AC, actually. But
good for you.
But yeah, so the climate change issue is obviously a glaring one, and one of the ways in which people are dealing with that is how we consume power and the ways in which we consume power. So
and produce power.
And produce power. So that's why we have our guests here.
That's right. So that's where we are, talking about climate change, power. And we have some guests who have not just talked about it, but taken some action to kind of deal with this. And so let's introduce our first guest to talk about that. That's Mike Eisenfeld. Mike, good morning. Thank you for being here because you are a power user of solar power on your home.
Yes, good morning.
Good to have you here. Welcome to the first show.
Yeah, thank you.
I'm not sure if we should thank you for being here or say we're sorry for you being here to this first show, but we're trying to focus.
Yeah, my wife and I moved to Farmington 26 years ago, and in 2001, were able to build a house up in the Foothills area, and at that point, the renewable energy program at San Juan College was a pretty eminent part of the curriculum, and we had a kind of inventory done of our home. We weren't able to put renewable energy on our house at the time that it was built due to other complications. But we basically were able to put hot water solar on our house sort of early on. And then in 2011, we decided to put solar panels on our house. And that sort of put us on a journey of contributing kind of to the amount of electricity that we were using per month. It was designed to cover 100% of our power. And actually, the community really kind of stepped up to help us with that in designing it and permitting it and then making it a reality.
Nice.
Yeah.
And so I would say that you were one of the first homes in the community to do this. And there are certainly others, and I know there's stories of other folks as well. But, I mean, you were pretty much on the, I say, cutting edge of some of this technology because it is still evolving even as we talk today.
Yeah, I actually think that we were about the 100th.
Really?
Some of the people in our community, like Paul Pavlik and others, were kind of
first.
The preeminent folks who not only put solar on their homes.
Gotcha. I know, but still 100 out of 50,000 households, I'd say, is still a small percentage.
Yeah. I mean, I think that it's definitely sort of something that, you know, people have to think about and choose to invest in, and that there could be some incentives, or in other cases there could be disincentives, but it's definitely something that you have to pursue and do a bit of homework kind of on your own.
Right, which is what we're going to talk to you about today a little bit.
Right. And I mean, and I do have a question as a renter. So I'm a renter and living on a, you know, single income. It's party of one over here. And so, you know, I know that one of the concerns is just the expense of fitting your house with solar power. And I've heard a bit about these like micro solar panel things. So smaller ones that you put in your window or whatever. And so I would be interested in what you would say to folks like me. I think there's a lot of folks out there like me. So I don't know who wants to take that question.
Well, we can ask Mike for now, but we haven't introduced our third guest yet. But we could, and we will, in just a moment. But yeah. Mikey, do you have any experience with some of those smaller installations or technology that Megan's talking about?
I don't really have a lot of experience. I think maybe Eli.
Then let's bring Eli into the conversation.
But again, you know, I think that if there are incentives that could be utilized by the local utilities, or if there's some way to kind of get with solar companies, and there are some creative financial ways that renters could be involved in this. The prices of solar has come down dramatically, so I think it's more feasible than ever.
Right. Gotcha. Well, let's bring Eli into the conversation. Eli Pavlik is our other guest who's here with us this morning. Welcome back to KSJE. It's great to have you here.
Thank you so much for having me.
You bet. We are identifying you as a solar power advocate, which I think is an accurate identification. You don't currently have solar power at your house, but you're certainly familiar with what we're talking about.
Yeah, I am.
And some other issues.
I've been in and around the world of solar since I was about 10 years old, and I'll brag on behalf of my parents. It was the house that I lived in that was the first house that was interconnected with a solar system to the grid in Farmington. The first one.
Nice.
In about 2005. And my parents have had a trouble-free solar array on their house. Now it's 2021.
So wow.
Over 15 years. It's chugging along great. And I hope to someday install solar on my house. But, you know, for me, and we've already mentioned this, it's a resources question, and I don't frankly have the money for it right now. But,
right.
You know, down the line, I hope that's something I can be part of. Yeah.
Sure. And I think that's probably where a lot of folks are too, Mike, when to hear you talking about it, that you know, you built your house, and then a few years later were able to put on the solar panels, and, I mean, you had a growing family, and so, and I don't know how big your house is, how many square feet, but all these things you have to take into account, right, if you're designing a system and deciding, you know, do you want it to cover 100% of your energy needs, 50% of your energy needs, additional, and produce energy and send it back out to the grid? I mean, there's all these decisions you have to make, right, when you're thinking about doing something like this and the costs involved.
Yeah, there's a lot of research that went into figuring out, you know, if it was viable. And for our family, you know, our house is like 2,000 square feet, and, you know, we have a flat roof. And so then one of the things was trying to determine if our roof was weight-bearing for solar, and so that sort of required some digging in. And then the cost at the time was about $17,000 for the size that we were after, about 5 kilowatts.
Right.
And that system.
would be cheaper today, I would assume, right? Since the price of solar has come down, you've said.
Yeah. It's probably half of that. And the thing that was really neat about it was the community support. I'm a big fan of Eli's dad because he was a graduate of the Renewable Energy Program and really helps with people designing. And then we kind of had a work crew that the things that you need to look at are kind of the racking and the panels. And the other thing is the efficiency of the panels has improved dramatically. And some of the technology out there is just incredible.
Nice.
Then the other thing is microinverters and that sort of stuff. So there's a technical side to it that is really interesting. And then, you know, once it's up on your roof, you really kind of forget about it. And it's been 10 years for us. And I would say that, you know, sometimes people are interested or concerned about, you know, the payback. And I think ours has paid itself off many times. And I'm very thankful for our ability to kind of move in a different direction.
Right. Getting back to Megan's point about renters and kind of what options that they may have, and we talked about this before we came on the air this morning, that in other communities, some of their utilities offer customers an option of where they get their power from. And so some may be, you know, if you want to buy all renewable energy, you maybe pay a few dollars more every month, but you have decided to do that on your electric bill, and so that's what you are doing. I don't think we have that option here, but other utilities do. Eli, is that something, and Mike, is that something you would advocate for in at least Farmington? We know we have the city electric utility here.
Yeah, I mean, your show is called Solutions from the Street, and there are a lot of different ways to approach a problem like this. And for renters that want to participate in the renewable energy transition, if you're somebody that's interested in that, there are different ways to do it. And one of them is this thing called community solar. I don't know if you guys have heard of community solar, but the New Mexico State Legislature recently passed a bill at this most recent legislative session called the Community Solar Act. And what that does is it requires publicly regulated utilities, Farmington not being an example of one of those, but PNM, which serves Albuquerque and Santa Fe, would be an example of that, to have community solar. And what that is you build a big array, a private company usually will build a big solar array somewhere within the utility's service area. And then people that are renters or even homeowners or businesses, apartments, whatever, can subscribe to a section of this solar array. And that helps a renter who's paying an electricity bill, or maybe somebody whose roof is not, maybe is shaded by too many trees or not standard, like is not able to hold solar panels on their roof for whatever reason, or you got an apartment complex, or you got a business but you don't really have any roof space, but you still want your electricity to be solar. Community solar is a great option for that. Some tribes have put in community solar projects in place. Farmington Electric has not. That would be an option. You know, Farmington Electric could put up a solar array and say, we're going to let people to subscribe to a certain section of this to get their power each month from that array. And that's a solution straight from the street. That's a thing where us individual consumers can participate in that, fund the project, and buy the electricity.
So why was Farmington an exception to the bill? Or are you just saying they haven't opted into it?
Yeah, thanks. So a clarification on that. The New Mexico State Legislature only has jurisdiction over state-regulated utilities. PNM and the utility that services Las Cruces are examples of that. We are a muni, a municipal utility.
The city owns the electric utility. That's the difference.
Right, which means that we are regulated actually. Farmington Electric is actually not regulated by anyone at the state level. We're regulated federally. So it's actually the federal government that oversees and tells Farmington Electric what you can and can't do, rather than anybody at the state level. So whenever you see energy policy coming out of the state government, it in many cases, it won't actually apply to Farmington Electric and other municipally owned utilities in the state.
Right. And there aren't very many. We should be clear, right?
And I can't actually say how many there are. I mean, Aztec is an example of another one.
True. But yeah. PNM, as you mentioned, is the largest utility provider in the state, I think, and they are regulated by the Public Utilities Commission and are doing some of these things that you explained. And I think we've got some solar fields going up here in San Juan County for PNM, right, to replace some of the energy that they're losing from the San Juan generating station. So
yes,
that's what's...
We do. And I would also mention that Farmington Electric Utility System does have an option to purchase renewable energy.
Oh, they could,
yeah.
Of course.
But if I recall correctly, it carries a premium. And I would argue that that there should be no premium, that renewable energy costs have decreased to the extent that that's where most utilities are investing.
Right. We're seeing that for sure. Well, and the other thing we wanted to ask both of you about is, as we talk about some of these, again, solutions, if someone wanted to put panels on their house or do some of these projects to kind of figure out then, you know, do you tie it into the grid? Do you live off the grid and just live on your own? You know, I think power's gone off my house at 3 times this summer, and sometimes it's been kind of hot. So I keep thinking about, you know, if I had solar panels and batteries, I wouldn't have to worry about that. But that's a whole other conversation, isn't it, Mike? You mentioned that your system, you're tied to the grid, and when you put yours in, I imagine the battery technology was not maybe where it is today to be able to maybe run your whole household off of a wall of batteries.
Yeah.
At that time.
If I were to be considering a solar system for my home right now, I would go with batteries. But it's an evolving technology. And it...
But it's an additional expense, too.
Yeah, there's an additional expense. But again, it's sort of like what you're willing to invest in.
Sure. Well, and then you wouldn't be at the whim of the grid, would you?
Well, for me, I think that you know, our family, we would like to, you know, consider an electric vehicle at some point, and further ways that, you know, we can kind of utilize the solar power. And so we're thinking about expansion and thinking about ways that we can be more creative and innovative.
Nice.
Nice. And I mean, I have two questions, but let's start with this one. And this is to you, Eli, because you sent out a petition. I mean, I don't know. It was over a year ago. I can't remember. But I was wondering if you wanted to talk about what the purpose behind that was. And I mean, certainly speaks to the street aspect, because we were trying to generate a grassroots type of thing. But why don't you talk about that a bit?
Yeah, thanks for setting that up. So to try to make this a short explanation. Back in 2000, solar policy has been changing, and utilities are going through a process of trying to figure out how to interact with it. Back in 2017, the Farmington City Council enacted a new rate study that changed the rates for how solar customers pay the utility for their power. And basically what happened is they instituted something that is technically called a standby service rider, but that I called the solar tax, because I believe that's a more appropriate and factual description of what it is. And basically what the solar tax says is, based on how much solar you have on your house, if you're a solar homeowner, you're going to pay a fee for the right to have that solar. So for your average solar homeowner, for Mike, he's got a 5 kilowatt solar system. So he multiplies 5 times $7.50 and pays whatever that comes out to, like $30 each month for the right to have solar. Now, Mike's system was installed before 2017, so he was grandfathered in, so he doesn't actually pay that fee. But using him as an example, everyone that installed after 2017 is paying this solar tax on their bill. Now, I'll just remind you that every solar homeowner and every homeowner that pays an electric bill pays a base rate. And the base rate is, in Farmington, I think it's about $6 or $7 on our electric bill. And we pay that for the right to be hooked up to the system, because it costs Farmington Electric money to pay their staff, to buy their trucks, to maintain the lines and make sure the voltage is correct and run their calculations and do their studies, etc. And that's what we all pay the base charge for, in my perspective. But
the city has a different answer, don't they?
They do have a different perspective on that. And I think I think what's important, it's this tough conversation because your average person doesn't know that much about how electricity works, right, or how solar panels work,
right,
or
I
how
know.
Utilities
right.
handle all the things that they're supposed to
right.
handle. And so Farmington Electric will tell you, they'll say, well, there are extra costs associated with your solar system being hooked up to the grid. And that's not true. But the average person wouldn't really have reason to know that because most people don't know that much about utilities.
But don't they say, Elaine, pardon me for interrupting,
no,
but
please.
I just wanted to get your perspective on this, because doesn't the city say we have to have a system that's generating enough power so that if your solar system goes down, you still want power, and so we as the utility have to have enough power to meet your needs as well as everybody else, and that's why we charge you what we charge you?
Yes. That is what they say. I would remind you that there are 50,000 customers in Farmington Electric's system. And so if you turn off a house and then you turn a house back on, Farmington Electric wouldn't even notice. If you turned 100 houses off at a split second and then turned them back on, Farmington wouldn't know that. If you turned Walmart off and back on, maybe that'd be the kind of thing that Farmington Electric would notice. And so the idea that Farmington has the responsibility of providing us with however much power we need at any moment of time, night or day, clouds or sun, yes, that is true. But that is already their responsibility. Every customer, let's say, for instance, what you're saying is power is variable, and solar customers' power can be variable. Clouds could come in, and all of a sudden, we need way more power than we needed before. But Megan could have a big cookout at her place and have her friend come and plug their RV into her extension cord coming from her house, and all of a sudden, that's a huge power fluctuation. Or somebody could have a rental home that's been off, had been unoccupied for a month. All of a sudden, there's a person living in this home. That's a huge power fluctuation. So what I'm saying is utilities like Farmington Electric, with 50,000 meters on their grid, they deal with massive power fluctuations all the time. And actually, clouds and sun and weather and the difference between spring and summer is more predictable than whether Megan is going to have a huge cookout at her house or whether a company like for instance, if some big company sells and leaves town and leaves a massive office building empty, that is so much more of a situation for Farmington Electric to deal with than
gotcha.
Like clouds over my solar panels.
Right. So we can predict the weather. Hear that, Texas? and when it comes to energy use as to what is available. And that's true maybe right now, so what if all of a sudden, you know, we get a lot of fans of this show start putting solar panels on their house, and now instead of 100 families, it's 25,000 households in San Juan County.
There would probably have to be a bunch of incentives for that.
Right, I understand.
Just because it's a philosophical.
But isn't that where we're going? Isn't that
yeah.
the goal is in a decade or so to have more solar?
The other thing about, the solar system that's on the solar panels that are on our home is that we net meter. So when we have excess power, it feeds into, and our neighbors can use it, and everybody else on the grid can use our power.
You sell it back to the city
yeah.
or something, right?
Yeah. So, I mean, we're contributing to their system, and they're basically paying us, I think what is a fair amount of money, but...
So for Megan's cookout and her RV, then you're helping to provide power to that RV.
Yeah. So the net metering concept is something that's like been a big deal in the utility world, and there's been a lot of sort of, utility lobbying against rooftop solar. And I would say that the net meter is a benefit to the community, and that if people are sort of willing to invest in contributing to creating power. If you had everybody in Farmington doing rooftop solar, it would preclude a lot of the other means of creating electricity that have contributed to climate change. I mean, if that's part of what we're talking about
right.
here.
Sure. Indeed.
Right. And so, and this might be kind of a good type of wrap-up moment, because we keep going back to the philosophical reasonings behind all of this. And I hear this all the time, and I'm sort of guilty of falling into this trap as well, which is a lot of folks say, well, gosh, there's consumers across the world, you know, China is consuming so much and contributing so much to the climate problem. What good is it to, you know, outfit my house with solar panels? Like, what kind of dent am I even making getting an electric car, for example? And so maybe you guys can speak to that. I mean, that's kind of the philosophy behind the show even. What are we even contributing to these big problems? So why don't you guys take it away? And Mike, you could start, and then Eli, maybe you can finish.
Yeah, well, I think that our decisions and what we choose to invest in as human beings, it starts at home. And I don't really know what's going on in China or India, and I hear that a lot. But I know that locally, we need to sort of change the way that we've been doing things, that the Southwest is especially prone to climate change impacts, and that the perpetuation of burning coal and other fossil fuels needs to be sort of circumvented by better decisions that are before us. And we have a lot of solar companies and utilities that are wanting to invest in renewables here, and I would hope that the Farmington Electric Utility System would reform itself to the extent that there is more of an incentive for people to pursue solar.
Eli?
Yeah. And I'm glad that Mike reminded us that climate change is something that's not theoretical, but it's something that we're living through right now. Megan, you and I were talking before we came on about our mutual love of Twitter, and I know personally, it seems like every time I go on Twitter, especially in the summer, it's videos of floods in streets, or it's wildfires, or it's hurricanes in places that shouldn't have hurricanes, or tornadoes in places that haven't had tornadoes. And, you know, the reality about climate change is that it's got to be me personally doing it, you personally doing it, you and me as a pair of people have to work together for solutions. And then all of us as a community, you know, we have to attack and fix climate change at every single level. And then we have to do it as a state and as a nation and ultimately as a global community, because this is a problem that nobody is escaping from. And so the solutions have to come from the street, but they have to be implemented really at every level.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very good. Thanks, guys.
And there we are.
Wow.
Well, how about that?
Yeah, great.
Right?
This was a great kickoff with these two.
Don't you think? Well, yeah. I mean, we thought about that.
We did. Who's articulate knows what they're talking about. Great. Okay.
There we go. Bing yeah. and bing. Yeah, there we go. Thank you both for coming in to help us launch this new program, Solutions from the Street. Again, it's a complicated issue, obviously. But I think there are some things that folks can look for, can maybe consider doing, maybe not today, but, you know, if you're a renter or even a new homeowner, you know, maybe people can think about some of these things. And the state, I think, is pushing some incentives, aren't they, for solar power and things along that line. So there are some benefits to that. And I think there are some other creative financing ways to do that if you're thinking about doing what Mike has done and putting it on your house.
Yeah. I mean, let's increase the dialogue, and people like Eli and I are always available if, you know, like the utility wants to talk or anyone wants to have sort of like a community discussion about the directions we're moving in.
There you go. Yeah. Barry, well, I haven't lost your number yet.
All right.
And you keep taking my calls, so thank you.
Of course. Thank you for having us.
You bet. Mm-hmm. Great to have you here. Eli, thank you for coming in.
It's my pleasure.
Great to have you here as well. Megan? First show
Thanks for coming in
the books.
Yeah, first show in the books.
So how about that?
Stick around for next week, Solutions of the Street.
I think we should let our viewers and listeners know if they have a problem that they would like us to maybe try to tackle on the show. They can reach out through Facebook or email or any way to do that, ksje@sanjuancollege.edu, and we'll put it on the list.
Yes. Please
There's no
do.
Shortage, I'm afraid, of topics
problems
for this
and
new
solutions.
Show.
So, yes, definitely refer your friends, refer folks that you know are doing good in the world, and we'll have them on.
Every Friday. Here we go. Thank you. Great to be here with you.
You too.
All right. See you next week.
See you next week.
All right. Did you enjoy that podcast? We hope that you did. And if you did, share it with your friends. And if you really want to keep podcasts like this coming, please support KSJE. You can do it easily online at ksje.com.